again, focusing on this time of the first few days that you have, that your consciousness is clear, and before the court date. So in other words, this period when that court date was pending, can you describe how you felt, what you were thinking about?
I was terrified, and I was terrified not just because of the bombing. I was equally terrified that I would be framed for this bombing and spend my children's childhood in prison and not get to raise my children.
And did anything happen during that period to strike it? That's a bad question. What describe, when you say you're terrified, what are you experiencing this time?
I learned through this experience that extreme fear is a physical phenomenon and not just a mental phenomenon. I would shake uncontrollably, and people would try to hold me and calm me down and have great difficulty doing so. I experienced complete sleeplessness. I could not sleep at all. I would be awake the entire night 100% of the time. It just felt like there was a hole in my stomach. I was so scared. I couldn't focus on, you know, it consumed my consciousness, how petrified I was. I didn't know the extent of my physical injuries. I knew that I was in traction and was being told that I would probably spend my life in a wheelchair. But I was, in the thought of doing that in prison, was very frightened.
Did you know at that time that the FBI was involved in the case?
Absolutely.
What did you understand to be their involvement?
I read all of the newspapers from May 24th on that people brought me. So whatever statements were made in the newspapers, I was aware of, and that included the FBI's involvement.
Was there anything else about the FBI involvement that was on your mind at this period in connection with what your fears about what might happen to you?
I was also aware of the FBI's previous activities in Earth First and agent infiltrators and things like that in Arizona and other places. And I also feared that the FBI would disrupt our political activities in Edward Summer.
You said earlier that you didn't get to see the children while you were in the hospital. Is that right?
I didn't get to see them immediately. I got to see them maybe about a month after the bombing.
Okay. Were you able to talk to them on the phone?
No, I didn't have a phone in my room, and I couldn't get out of bed because of the depression.
Okay. Did there come a time when you were informed that your house had been searched again?
Yes.
And do you recall learning about that?
Yes.
And what were you told at that time? What did you find out?
I was told that, well, it wasn't just that I was told. I was also showed the newspaper articles about it. So I knew both from people telling me and also from reading that the FBI had researched my house. I knew they said that they were looking for nails. I knew they said that they had found matching nails in my house that they claimed matched nails from the bomb.
Were you in involved in discussions with people that you were seeing about how to refute that?
Yes.
And what were the what was the substance of the attempt to refute it?
I knew that the legal team was trying to get to see the physical evidence and not succeeding. And so my ex-husband took the lead in urging myself and my defense team to use my medical condition to prove what we were unable to get access to with the physical evidence, because it could, he contended, and I agreed, that it could be shown by the location and nature of my injuries that they came from below, not behind.
And what came of that attempt, to your knowledge?
My ex-husband, Mike Sweeney, by the way, that'll probably make it easier. Mike Sweeney organized a press conference at which he would release this artist's rendition, etc., that I described earlier to show that my injuries were consistent with a blast from below, not behind. I guess that's the answer to that. Mm-hmm.
And what was the relation of the press conference to the search?
The search came, I believe, the day after the press conference and subsumed the headlines that my friends and relatives and legal team were trying to get, so that the day that it's like, well, Barry's house searched again. Oh, and by the way, her friends say that her medical records show that it was on the bottom. So it, the search subsumed any publicity benefit of the work that was done to show my medical records.
Do you recall seeing newspaper stories about the search?
I recall seeing them and that they were particularly upsetting.
And why were they?
One of the headlines said, bomb built at Barry's house. And the contention that I was building bombs in a 600 square foot cabin while my children were sleeping was very upsetting to me.
And do you recall where that headline appeared?
I believe it was the Press Democrat.
And do you recall what was in the story at all?
Yes, it listed the claims on the search warrant as if they were facts. It said, you know, the search warrant says we're looking for such and such, and the way that it came out, it sounded like they already knew these things instead of they were looking for these things. So I felt that that series of articles, headlines, there's another one in the Chronicle, something about sack of nails led to discovery of something. I felt that that particular round of headlines of articles particularly vilified me and particularly without foundation.
And did that also affect your feelings about what would happen with the case?
Yes.
And how did that make you feel about the case?
It made me feel very powerless. At that time, and this is Foundation Joe, at that time the Lord's Avenger letter had already come out suggesting that there was a bomber other than myself. And it felt like a huge setback. It was all of a sudden we were back to day one. So I felt violated both by the search and by the press coverage.
When you say setback, you mean like...
As far as establishing our innocence or our credibility.
And did you come to understand something in that period about what had happened in the search itself that's separate from the effect of the press coverage?
The search felt very much like a violation, especially because my children were living there. And, excuse me, I got ready. My ex-husband and his girlfriend had moved into my house so that my children could have some stability during this traumatic time, and for the house that they were living in to be researched when they were just beginning to feel a little bit of stability again was very hard.
And you were concerned about this there in the hospital, that's what they're saying?
Very much.
And up to this time, in addition to the things you've told us about your fear of going to prison, your fear of being separated from your children, were you mindful of the effect that these accusations against you might have on the political work that you've been doing?
Very much.
And what was your sense of what impact they would have? Go ahead.
I felt that they not only would but were discrediting Earth First, undermining our call for nonviolence, frightening people away, and creating a tense and dangerous situation on the front lines where some of our adversaries believed that we were now bombers.
Were in your while you were in the hospital, to your knowledge, were the plans and then the events of Redwood Summer going forward?
Yes. I also have an addendum to that answer as to how it affected Redwood Summer.
Mm-hmm.
It took up our whole legal team. It took up much of our key organizers, people who had intended to spend their time, direct people who had been in the struggle for a long time, who had planned on being there to direct the demonstrations, to make sure that the people coming in from out of town understood what we were about. They were taken up in trying to defend Daryl and me, and trying to organize support for me in the hospital, and trying to help us with the legal work. So it really took our top leadership out.
Was this something you had to be concerned with then in the hospital?
I was concerned, but I couldn't do anything about it. I was in traction.
And how did that make you feel with respect to the case against you? You were aware that the organization and the Redwood Summer work was disrupted by the need to respond to the bombing charges against you and Daryl.
Yes.
So what did this make you feel with respect to what had happened?
It made me feel that this was an act of political sabotage aimed at Redwood Summer as much as anything aimed at me or Daryl.
Once the district attorney announced that he wasn't going to file charges, did you continue to feel the impact of the charges and the arrest in what was happening in your life?
Yes.
In what way?
Although the charges were dropped, we were not exonerated. The FBI in particular, and Richard Held as an individual, made a point in the newspapers, in the news media, in Richard Held's case, it was on the television, to say that the only reason that, yes, there wasn't enough evidence to charge us at this time, but we were still considered suspects and were not exonerated, and that they were going to continue their, that the FBI now, rather than the Oakland police and the lead, that the FBI was going to continue the investigation with the assumption that we were still suspects.
And were you doing or trying to get done anything? Strike it. I'm sorry. What were you doing at this time to try, what if anything, to counteract the effects of the charges against you in the public mind?
I was giving interviews. I began actually before I was strong enough to. I began to allow press into my room to give interviews so that I could help counter the impression of us as terrorists. I'm not sure what else you may be getting at, but that's one thing I can
say. Did you have any success with that? Were you getting the answer out?
It was like a tug of war, yes and no. As soon as we gained ground, something else would come about. That, in fact, that was kind of the context of that second search. As soon as something would happen that appeared to exonerate us, any favorable press coverage, whatever, some other thing that would come out that would accuse us of being a terrorist.
Can you recall anything after the second search of that nature, something else that came out against you?
Well, what I mentioned was the statement that we were still suspects and that the FBI would be investigating, they would be coming up north, they would be conducting an investigation under the assumption that we were still suspects.
Did you ever hear that the FBI or the Oakland police were looking at any other suspects?
No.
Did you receive any more threats?
Yes.
And when did that happen?
I received threats while I was in the hospital in the mail.
In mail to the hospital?
Yes.
That came to you, mail that you had to open?
Yes.
And what kind of threats were they?
Well, one of them was the one I guess I mistakenly put in the wrong file, that crazy man that writes those closely written, insane letters. I received them almost daily. I stopped opening them. I just threw them away.
Uh-huh.
I received, after the Lord's Avenger letter, I began to receive letters from Christians, or I don't know if they're Christians, but people associating themselves with the right-wing Christian ideology, threatening me. I threw them away. I was too scared by them at the time.
I was getting to that. So the threats that you received in the hospital, you
didn't throw away. I saved one.
Okay. Okay. Showing you a document which I've miraculously pre-marked at 6A. I'll ask you if that is a...
Copies, too?
Recognize that document?
Yes.
And is that, what is it?
This is the threat that was placed in my landlord's mailbox.
How did you receive it?
My landlord made a copy and gave it to me.
Okay. And was this, did you make any report to the police about it?
Yes.
And what came of that? What police did you make the report to?
Willett.
And what was the nature of the report?
Well, we gave them a copy of the threat, and I went down and talked to them, and they turned it over to the county because I don't actually live in Willis. I live in the county. But they did volunteer if we felt an immediate danger to come out, even though we weren't technically in Willis because they were the closest police force. I found out from Steve Talbot.
Okay, who's Steve Talbot?
He is a reporter who produced a video documentary about the bombing that was called Who Bombed Judy Berry and aired in May of 1991.
And did Steve Talbot give you a copy of the letter?
Yes, he did.
Do you have a belief as to who wrote that letter and sent that picture to the Ukiah police?
Yes, I believe it was Earl Sutley.
And what is the basis of your belief?
The information contained in the letter is all things that he would know from a certain weekend that he spent up here. He owns the Uzi. He placed it in my hands. He had access to the photographs. And he attempted to get me to sell him marijuana right around the time that ad was run.
What's the basis of your belief that something in the letter is connected to Irv?
Although I hadn't seen Irv for years, in November of 1988, he traveled to Ukiah.
And what happened in that occasion?
Afterwards, he stayed, and he had a camera. He was staying with Pam Davis, who he was living at her house at the time, a friend of mine. And they had a camera, and were taking pictures. And he stayed overnight because he was traveling north, and he stayed at Daryl's house. And while we were at Daryl's house, we had certain conversations, which are reflected in this letter. And also, he whipped his Uzi out of his trunk and suggested to us that it would be fun to pose with it, imitating the famous Patty Hearst pose. And we took turns posing, and they took photos. Actually, there's photos of four people, Irv, Pam, me, and Daryl, each holding the Uzi. Now, this photograph contains a gun that's owned by Irv that he suggested that we pose, that he placed it in my hands. I had a hard time even looking serious. I kept laughing and not holding it right. He placed it in my hands, and he actually lowered it, I now believe, so the Earth First symbol would show on my shirt. So he actually posed this picture. He suggested that we do it. He actually placed the gun in my hand and posed it.
Have you ever fired an Uzi?
No.
Machine gun?
No.
Have you ever been trained in the use of an Uzi?
No.
Have you had any association in your life with the use of firearms?
I fired a .22 rifle a couple times with a boyfriend of mine in high school, but that's about it.
Okay. Did you ever, or was there ever, to your knowledge, any firearms training, or as referred to in the letter that we saw, carried on by Earth First in this area?
Absolutely not.
Okay. And so now, how long were you in the hospital?
Eight weeks and then another two in a rehab center.
Two more weeks?
Yes.
And then you moved home?
No. Then I went to... Actually, I was still afraid to go home, and also I needed round-the-clock care. So I moved in with a nurse, actually the person who had been my midwife, and she took care of me for another month.
And during that period, besides the things that you testified about this morning, was there any were there any further effects on you of the occurrence of the arrest and the charges against you and the case against you and the publicity?
Can you say that again?
Were there any further effects that you're mindful of now and thinking over?
I'm not understanding is, do you mean back then or since
back
then?
Back then. We'll start back then. I'm starting about now. When you were out of the hospital, out of the rehab place, and staging your way back home. We're talking about August 1990 and thereabouts.
Well, I continued to experience levels of terror relating to both the bombing itself and being under investigation by the FBI.
Terror of the kind you described earlier.
That's right.
And did you were you also involved in nascent efforts to try to counteract the public effects of the false charges?
Yes.
And what activities did you engage in along those lines? What activities did you engage in?
Mostly maintaining a public persona and doing press interviews, at which I actually didn't intend to do because I was so traumatized by the bombing. But I realized that if I didn't speak in the papers, then I wouldn't be able to represent myself. So I reluctantly became a public figure again.
And what was your thought process as to the need to become a public figure again, as you put it?
I was being vilified in the press by the charges and, you know, by the continuing accusations against me. And I thought that was the only way to prove my innocence was by having people hear me speak myself.
And what particular occasions were there in which you were able to speak out publicly?
You're still talking about near the time of the bombing, right?
Yes. We're talking about in the balance of 1990. Go ahead.
It was all press interviews. I was way too disabled to travel or speak publicly. Mm-hmm.
And besides press interviews, was there anything else that you did?
There was something else, and that is that people around me tried to put together our own investigative teams because we felt the bombing wasn't being investigated. And I, of course, had to attend these meetings and discuss in great detail all of these things, kind of, you know, dragging it all up. So there were, you know, regular meetings just with non-experts, just with people who were trying to help us solve the bombing thing.
Can you describe any of the particular steps that were taken in terms of investigation of the bombing?
We would have these meetings where they would bring up all, like, Charlie Stone. Why do you think Charlie Stone? Jack Azevedo. We'd go through all people that we thought were potential suspects. We discussed where did the fake press releases come from and things like that. We just kind of brainstormed to try to figure some of that out. And I don't think we got very far, but we certainly tried.
Can you summarize what was in your mind as being the particulars of the political sabotage which had been carried on against you by the FBI?
The attempt to portray Earth First as terrorists, the attempt to falsely associate us with bombs to make people fear us, the attempts to undermine our nonviolent organizing campaigns by portraying us as violent, all appear to me as efforts to neutralize a political group.
Today, how do you feel about the how do you feel about the continuing effect of the original accusations against you?
Through my efforts, I think they've lessened in my community, but out of the area, I'm still perceived as a terrorist by, you know, people who only know vaguely about Earth First. I think Earth First continues to be discredited by it, and people on the East Coast, for example, if they know anything about me, I'm that terrorist who blew myself up with my own bomb.
Have you had concrete or particular reports of people still referring to you in those terms or thinking of you, mentioning you in those terms? And can you tell us any particulars, or is that just a general?
The most place I've gotten information like this is friends tell me their parents think this, for example. I also know other political groups have been wary to work with Earth First after that, and you know, we've had to constantly battle that.
Do you still feel the effects of the yourself, of the accusations?
Yes.
Effects on yourself?
Yes.
And in, say briefly, how do you feel that? How do you experience that?
Well, I know I certainly felt some bitterness when Richard Jewell was given a public exoneration and a $500,000 reward. There's never been any reward in my case, nor exoneration. No, I'm sorry. What I meant was the reward. No, he wasn't. I didn't mean he was given a reward. I meant a reward was posted for the, you know, for information leading to the arrest of the bomber in that case. Whereas no reward was ever posted in my case for the information leading to the arrest of the bomber. That's what I meant by that.
Okay.
Anything else?
Well, it just, you know, it's kind of a it's a disturbing thing, and I feel a great injustice of.
I have no further questions of the witness.
No questions for the federal defendant.
No questions for the Oakland defendant.
That concludes then the deposition to Barry in the above mentioned case, and we'll adjourn without Dave.